If you'd like, go ahead and mark your Bibles in Daniel chapter 5. Daniel 5. The first verse we'll look at will be in 1 Corinthians 10, and then we'll turn right back to Daniel 5. Glad you're with us tonight. Good to see you again. Last week, David Bunn and I were talking, and he asked me what I was going to preach on this next week, and I said, Belshazzar, Daniel 5, and he stopped and looked at me. He said, "How many sermons on Daniel do you have?" I said, "A bunch. 6, 7 now." So at least it's not a Joshua sermon, right? But there are so many things in Daniel that we can talk about. This is one of those things where a saying, and we have it here, the writing on the wall, we use it all the time. You'll hear people say it. Well, it came from Daniel chapter 5. You hear someone saying, "Man, why did you leave your job?" And somebody says, "Well, I could see the writing on the wall. I knew they were about to go under, and I didn't want to be there when it happened." So we know what that means. We can see that something is about to happen, and usually something bad is what that phrase means. It all started there in Daniel 5. 1 Corinthians 10, though, verse 11. Look at that with me. All of these Old Testament examples, and you may actually have a heading over chapter 10 that says something to that effect, examples from the Old Testament. Verse 11, "Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come." And I think it was in a prayer a couple weeks ago, Kirk mentioned that. We were studying something in the Old Testament, and he just mentioned it, how these are examples for us. These are good for us. This is not just an academic exercise that we're going through. When we look at Old Testament scriptures, there is so much that we can learn. And Belshazzar is no different. There are a lot of lessons we can learn from him. So go on with me to Daniel 5. Let's go back there. Again, mark your places there. That's primarily where we're going to be. If you like history, this is especially a neat chapter. We get to sit in on one of these great historical events. If you're familiar with King Cyrus of the Persians, and how he overcame Babylon, well, you get to see it tonight. By the time we're done with this chapter, we get to see the city of Babylon falls and Cyrus sweeps in, and his power and that Medo-Persian Empire really begins to take hold. We get to see all of it. It's like we get a front row seat to everything going on that night. The time is 539 BC. At this time, Nabonidus is the king of Babylon. Belshazzar, his son, is co-regent, which means co-king. So later when Belshazzar is going to make the offer, if anybody can tell me what this writing means, I'll make him third in the kingdom. Why third? That seems weird. Well, this is why. Because even though it says he's king, he's actually co-king. Nabonidus, his father, is number one. Belshazzar is number two. So what's the next available option? It's number three. That's why he offers that. A couple of interesting things. We're not going to go through all of history, but Nabonidus was kind of a priest king. He was from among the priests, and his interests were not so much ruling a nation as archaeology and religious stuff. He would leave the city of Babylon for long periods of time. He'd leave it in the hands of Belshazzar, his son, and he would go out and just excavate these different ruins and looking for old things, relics and stuff like that. He took and made the moon goddess Sin, the primary deity that was worshipped among the Babylonians. They had been worshippers of Marduk for a long time, and so he shifted that. It was not popular at all. So his son, Belshazzar, who was a competent soldier, not much of a ruler, he is the one who is in Babylon this night when all of this happens. And Nabonidus, of course, is away doing these various other things. Nebuchadnezzar has been dead about 23 years by this time. Belshazzar is actually Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. His mother, Belshazzar's mother, was Nebuchadnezzar's daughter. So I probably should have put you a family tree up there instead of saying all that. But there are connections there that we need to see. It helps kind of go through this. Cyrus, the king of Persia, he is just gobbling up lands left and right, taking over. And now he set his sights on Babylon. To give you an idea of what the kingdoms look like, here is Babylon in the, I don't know what color that is. It's a light purple. Whatever I use, if I say lavender, it's wrong. I know it's this one here. The city of Babylon is right there. So you can see the area covered by this empire, very, very strong and solid kingdom. But the Medes and the Persians are making a push, and they're taking over all of these lands. And by the time that the Persian Empire gets to its fullest extent, this is what it's going to look like. So here's Babylon now. Obviously, Palestine is going to be controlled by them, even into the lands of Egypt. They control all of this region here in Asia Minor. So Cyrus is busy, and Cyrus is conquering. And now, as I mentioned, he wants Babylon. We'll talk a little bit about how he did that at the very end. It's fascinating to me. But let's get right into the text. Daniel chapter 5. Cyrus and his army, they have moved toward Babylon. You would think anybody with any sense would be terrified. So what do Belshazzar and 1,000 of his lords do? You've got Cyrus knocking at the door. Let's throw a drinking party. That's what they decide to do that. Now you've got this incredibly powerful ruler who is just, he's moving through basically unopposed. And what are you going to do? Well, we just break out the wine. That's their plan. For it's like there's not a problem in the world. Nothing's going on. Daniel 5, verse 1. Belshazzar the king made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of the 1,000. Danger at the very walls there. They feel like they're fine, though. They're protected by their thick walls. They're protected by their own armies, their soldiers. Not worried in any way whatsoever. Look at verse 2. While he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father, which would technically be his grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple which had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple of the house of God, which had been in Jerusalem. And the king and his lords, his wives and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. Okay, so he's invited all of his lords. He's putting on a big show for them. They feasted. It's a big drinking party on top of it. It's everybody is just having this extravagant good time. And then they say, well, you know what we ought to do? You know, let's really crank this up a little bit. Go get the good stuff. Go get the silver and the golden vessels that once belonged in the temple of Jehovah that Nebuchadnezzar had brought when he captured all of Judah. Let's drink out of those. So they go and they send and they bring that out of the treasury, and now they're using God's stuff. And remember what those gold and silver vessels were for. They were for doing his service unto him at the temple. The priests of God would have used these for services unto him, all of those different rituals that were to be done under the law. This is what they were for. What are these pagans using them for? We're going to get drunk out of them. And then on top of it, we're going to praise the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. You know, it's not enough just to live this life of debauchery. We're going to drag God's name in the dirt on top of it. And then we're going to completely ignore him, and we're going to sing praises and honor to these gods that don't even exist. That's what's going on this night in the city of Babylon. It's a mockery of God and his things. It's worshiping the created, the creation, instead of the creator. Our world does this. You know, it fills itself to the brim with entertainment and covetousness, mocks the holy and pure things of God, never understanding that destruction is right around the corner. And I think that's the lesson for us. I'm not going to bring up a lot of lessons from this. I think there is one powerful lesson that stands out here. You may think you're safe and secure. We may think everything is fine and good and all that's great. And destruction may be right there, just around the corner, waiting to pounce. Judgment may be right there, and we just choose to ignore it. Well, look at verse 5. So all this is going on. But then, verse 5, in the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his hips were loosed. and his knees knocked together against each other. And just imagine it for a second. We're feasting, we're partying, everybody's laughing. You can just imagine, the wine is flowing and the food is so good. And all of a sudden, Belshazzar, I just picture him in the middle of this big laugh, and he looks and sees this hand. This hand, there's nothing connected to it, writing on the plaster of his palace. And it's opposite of the lampstand. So it's in a position where light is bathing it. You can't miss it. Can you imagine what would happen with us? We're standing here, we're doing this, and all of a sudden on the wall there, this hand appears and starts writing. We may look at him and laugh when we see his knees knocking together and his countenance change. No, sir, that'd be me. I'd be terrified if something like that happened. And so with all of this partying, all of this feasting, guess what? Party's over. The party is done when this happens. I like this particular artist's rendition just because of the look on his face and the look on that lady's face right there. That is what I would be looking like if I saw this. Those words appear. He is terrified. Pride can disappear in a hurry, can't it? Well, they're just so caught up in themselves, just so arrogant with this thing. And then one thing happens. Pride's out the door. Oh, there's no arrogance anymore. There's no being puffed up. You talk about being grounded in a hurry. And that is exactly what happens to Belshazzar this night. I guess a point for us. When God's wrath appears, all pride is going to be swept away. There will be nothing that we're prideful about anymore when his wrath hits. We can get caught up. We can get caught up as they did in things that we think give us security and in our jobs and our money and our kids' activities. And we can get so busy that we forget about God. And bit by bit, we let those things steal God's time and his presence from us. We put God in the back seat. And if anything in this lesson, God makes it clear to Belshazzar, he takes a back seat to no one. And before the night's over, this king will realize that to the very end of his life. Mark your places and turn to Proverbs 3. Proverbs 3, I feel like we've read this one a lot lately. It's funny how verses do that. They just kind of keep coming up as they get in our mind. But Proverbs 3, verse 5, give you just a second to get there. I want to read a couple of additional verses from what we've read lately. Proverbs 3, verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. That is not going on here in Babylon that night. They're not acknowledging him at all. They're mocking him, if anything, and then ignoring him for the rest of the part. But look at verse 7. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It'll be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. Arrogance is like, it's like climbing up on this rotten, shaky ladder. You know, you just kind of, you climb up real high on this nasty, rotten ladder that's going to fall any second. And you say, hey, look at me. Look how high up here I am. And you're waving to everybody. And the wise people around you say, man, you need to get down. That is not safe. That's not where you want to be. But the arrogant guy doesn't see that. He doesn't see that the screws are coming out of the thing and the bolts are flying out and it's about to crash. He just says, man, I am so high. I can see everything from up here. And the wise try to warn him. Belshazzar was like that. He's been grounded now. Notice what he does. Verse 7. Let's turn back to Daniel 5 with me. Verse 7. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. The king spoke, saying to the wise men of Babylon, whoever reads this writing and tells me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and he shall be the third ruler in the kingdom, which we mentioned earlier. Verse 8, now all the king's wise men came, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king its interpretation. So he sends to the best he has, his astrologers, his soothsayers. He promises great things to them. Clothed in purple, you know, that means royalty, and a gold chain around his neck, and you'll be third ruler. These guys are just as worthless as Nebuchadnezzar's were. They don't have a clue. They don't know what this is. Nobody can read the writing. Isn't it unfortunate that when bad things happen, people often go to the wrong sources for help. It's amazing. You see it over and over again. We may look to ourselves, our own power, but we need to go, as we read in Proverbs 3, verse 5. Go to God's wisdom and seek Him. Well, somebody in the palace does have some sense, and that's Belshazzar's mother. I mentioned earlier, this would be Nebuchadnezzar's daughter. Notice she comes in verse 10. And I say she comes in because the king's, I would say this, it says the queen there. I take this to be the queen mother because his wives are already there. They're all gathered together. And we're told here in verse 10, because of the words of the king and his lords came to the banquet hall. So she wasn't already there. This would be the queen mother. She comes in and she speaks, O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance change. Easier said than done after what's going on. But verse 11, she remembers something. Remembers from when she was a little girl. There is a man in your kingdom, and whom is the spirit of the holy God? In the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Well, we know this. We could read of this back just a couple chapters in the same book. Verse 12, inasmuch as an excellent spirit, knowledge, understanding, interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining enigmas were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will give the interpretation. Well, she's got some sense. She does. I know that there is a man in this kingdom. There's a man in this city who in times past, during the days of great Nebuchadnezzar, he could understand dreams and he could interpret them. And in him was the power of the mighty and holy God. You need to bring him in and ask him this question. She's right on all counts. Absolutely, he needs to be brought in. Notice Daniel comes in. Notice two things. Look at verse 13. What Belshazzar says. Daniel was brought in before the king, and the king said to Daniel, are you that Daniel who is one of the captives from Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? Verse 14, I have heard of you that the Spirit of God is in you. Drop down to verse 16. And I have heard of you that you can give interpretations and explain enigmas. He says that twice. This tells me a whole lot about Belshazzar. You know what it tells me? He is an idiot. And this is why. You have a man who is known for a fact to be able to know these great pieces of wisdom and to reveal these things to you. And not only is he not one of your counselors, you've never met him, and he lives in the same city as you. What kind of moron did they put in charge of this city? We do the same thing though, don't we? Everything falls apart, and then we start going, who do we go? We start going to godly people. Could you pray for me? I want you to pray for me. I need to be close to these people before the stuff crashes down. I need to have these relationships with God's people before everything. The wheels fly off. He's in the same city. You know for a fact he's made these great pieces of advice and decisions for your forebear, and you don't even know him? Man, what a shame. What a shame. Could it be that I've grown up? What if Silas grows up with Bill Hall sitting behind him, and he doesn't know Bill Hall at all? And people say, hey, you go to Westview? Yeah, Bill Hall's there. And he's like, oh, yeah, he is. Wow, man, it must be great to get to study with. I guess. I don't know much about him. How do you not know much about him? Do we see? But that's what he's done. Belshazzar didn't have time for a godly person. Belshazzar's concerned about all these physical things. And the only time Daniel comes into the picture is when trouble hits and somebody else has to give him the good advice to go seek it. Let us not be that way. Let's know God's people and have good relationships with them before trouble comes. It's interesting to me, the song, Take Time to Be Holy, one of the lines, what does it say? Make friends of God's children. Make friends of God. That's good advice. Good advice for all of us. Well, Daniel speaks. Look at verse 17. Let me go back. At the end of verse 16, if you can make this interpretation known to me, I'll give you purple, I'll give you chain, I'll make you third in the kingdom. Verse 17, Daniel says, just keep it. Just keep it. Another thing I appreciate about him, he's not in it for the money. He's in it to glorify the Lord. It's not about the gold. It's not about the purple. And here's the thing about that whole third in the kingdom business. Third place of nothing equals nothing. And before the night's over, that's what you got. And Daniel knows, I'm third of nothing. Who cares? But he makes sure that God is the one that's going to be glorified. And so Daniel comes in. Belshazzar wants to know, Daniel preaches him a sermon. That's what this is. It's a reminder of how God has dealt with the kings of Babylon in the past, specifically Nebuchadnezzar. So drop down to verse 18. This sermon that he teaches here, it's a reminder that God is in control. As humans, we have very limited control over the present, practically none over the future. What do we have to be so arrogant about? Belshazzar's failed to learn this lesson. Start in verse 18 with me. O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar your father a kingdom and majesty, glory and honor. I need to remember that. Where does that power, where does that authority, where does it come from? God gave it to him. That's where he got it from. Where do our leaders get the power to rule? God gave it to them. So before I get too happy to start bad-mouthing anybody in positions of power, I need to remember this is still true. That authority to rule came from the Lord. Verse 19. And because of the majesty that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whomever he wished, he executed. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he set up. And whomever he wished, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. Then he was driven from the sons of men. This is verse 21. His heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. They fed him with grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men and appoints over it whomever he chooses. You guys know this. I mean, this is just this lesson is being repeated from the previous chapter. This is what happened. And you remember Nebuchadnezzar's up on the wall, and he looks out at Babylon. He says, oh, Babylon, look what I did. And then while the words are still in his mouth, he struck down like an animal. And for 7 years, he remains that way. Well, this is, Daniel's just reminding him. If that happened to my grandfather, I would like to think it would be on my mind as king. That would be something that stuck with you. Verse 22. But you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart. Although you knew all this, you did know. You did know. You knew it happened, and yet it didn't faze you one bit, Belshazzar. This is an accusation. And you have lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives, your concubines have drunk wine from them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know. And the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. Pride is so foolish, isn't it? You just look at it, and when it's laid out like this, we can convince ourselves that we're something. We're not. We're not. All of the abilities and blessings that we have, where did they come from? Belshazzar knew what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. And not only did he ignore God, just like him, he mocked him, taking those vessels from the temple, using them to salute gods of wood and stone. Not only did you ignore him, you spit in his face. Verse 23 again, you praised these lifeless gods, and the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. I love that phrase. He holds your breath in his hand. He holds my breath in his hand. That's how powerful he is. And then that's how fragile I am. And my existence is. He gave us life. He sustains it for us. Have you ever thought about how fragile life is? What if tonight, and I'm just saying, what if I'm by myself and my heart stops beating? And I don't have anybody who is trained to help, and I don't have defibrillator, that thing that shocks you. I don't have it anywhere near. It's just me by myself, and my heart stops. What can I do? What can I do about it? Can I will it to be healthy and start beating like it's supposed to be again? No, I can't do it. You know what's going to happen? I'm going to die. And what if? What if my breathing stops and I don't have anybody to help me get that back, what's going to happen to me? I'm going to die. And I don't say that to be all gloom and doom. I say it to make a point. We die easily, guys. Life is fragile. What do we have to be so arrogant about? It's so easy to be lost. He holds my life in His hand. It's a gift from Him. Do I treat it like it's a gift? You know, you can't stand it. I know you can't stand it. I can't stand it. You give somebody a gift, and they're like, eh, it's not what I wanted. And you're like, see if I give you anything again. We do that with the life that we've been given sometimes. We treat it like, I'm just used to it. It's a precious gift. What are we doing with it? Well, let's get to the writing. Verse 24. So there was his sermon. Now he actually gets to the point where he's deciphering the writing for Belshazzar. Then the fingers of the hand were sent from him, from God, and this writing was written. And this is the inscription that was written. Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. Aramaic, which means numbered, numbered, weighed, and divided. Mene. Aramaic word meaning numbered. God has numbered the days of Babylon. That's it. He knew the beginning, He knew the end, and the days are numbered, and they've come to an end, Belshazzar. He has numbered your kingdom, this is verse 26, and finished it. Application. My days are numbered. Your days are numbered too. This nation, as much as I like the freedom that we live in it and all of those good things, its days are numbered. In this very earth that we walk on, its days are numbered. And guess who numbered them? The Lord did. Mark your places. We'll come right back, but turn to 2 Peter chapter 3. It's so easy to forget about this stuff. We get busy with our lives. We get busy with our jobs and our kids and our hobbies and our families and all of this stuff. We get busy and we forget about this fact. These days are numbered. This earth is numbered. Verse 10 of 2 Peter 3. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Before we read 11, just think about that. All the stuff I'm working for in this life, if it's physical stuff, what ultimately happens? What ultimately? The pharaohs were out of their mind. You can pack all that stuff in your tomb with you if you want to. It's not going to be there waiting on you in the afterlife. You know, do you know where all the pharaohs' stuff is now that they buried in their tombs? Tomb robbers stole it like 100 years ago and they sold it and then they got some kind of disease from in there and died. But it's not in there waiting on the pharaohs anymore. Because that stuff is just stuff. It's physical stuff that remains here, and their spirits have long departed. So all that stuff that we work on, one day this whole world is going to be burned up, and all the gold you achieved, even if you leave it to family member and family member and family member, it's going to melt, it's going to be gone. All of this stuff, if I'm placing my confidence in the physical, what am I working toward? Verse 11, therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat? What kind of persons ought we to be, knowing that this is the end result of all these physical things? Go back to Daniel chapter 5. The only thing that's going to have any significance in that day is our service to the Lord. It's the only thing that will remain. Tekel means weighed. Look at verse 27. You have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. He is specifically speaking to Belshazzar. He had been weighed and you do not measure up, Belshazzar. You have been found lacking. But you know what? All of us are going to be weighed in the balance one day too. In that last day, and Matthew 25 gives us a picture of that. Let's turn there. When judgment comes, every single one of us will be weighed in the balance. We'll look at verses 31 through 33, Matthew 25. I'll give you a second to get there. when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. He will set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on his left. I meant to look up something before. I believe it's in the song book. We shall stand before the throne. I think it's 652. There is a green hill. Let me check. I just want to read some of the lyrics from it. 509 in your songbooks. We won't sing it, but it's in a minor key, which is appropriately haunting. And if you guys are familiar with the song, you know it just kind of sends chills when you read it. But just notice the lyrics. We shall stand before the throne, stand with all, but stand alone. Face at last the aged one, God is holy, bow before him. We'll stand before the throne, all of us will, but we'll stand alone. We're together in that every man will undergo judgment. But you won't be able to depend on your neighbor to skew it in your way or to give you a little extra weight on that balance. It'll be you and me by ourselves. See the vindicated Son. Hear him say, depart, well done. Judgment sure for everyone. Christ is holy, listen to him. On his left, the doomed implore, but are locked beneath a door. There they burn forevermore. God is holy, love and fear him. Well, it's an honest song, isn't it? I think people don't like to sing this song sometimes because of that third verse. I need to hear it. Verse 4, but the faithful on his right, wearing crowns and garments white, sing forever in his sight, holy, holy, thou art holy. Go back to Daniel 5. Eupharson, the root word there is peres, which means divided. Verse 28, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Daniel doesn't, he doesn't break it to him easy. He doesn't try to stir him up, make him feel good about it. It's over. You've been found lacking and your kingdom's been taken away from you. It's going to be given to the Medes and the Persians. Babylon and her kings had forgotten about God. And so God said, okay, the time is over. Now, for all the man that Belshazzar is, look at verse 29. At least he keeps his word. He gave the command, and they clothed Daniel with purple, put a chain of gold around his neck, made a proclamation concerning him that he should be third ruler in the kingdom. So for a couple hours, I guess, he got to enjoy that honor. But look at the next verse. Chapter 5, verse 30. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain. And Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. That night, it was all over. So, I mean, just go back. Go back to the picture with all of the extravagance and all the feasting and all the wine. And we're laughing and we're praising the gods of silver and gold. And now you are dead, Belshazzar. You were the king of the greatest nation on the earth and you're dead. That is how quickly it changed. I'm going to give you this. Just so you know, if we can trust the Greek historian Herodotus, Cyrus, King Cyrus, the Euphrates ran right through the middle of Babylon. Cyrus diverted it upstream so that the water level got lower and lower and lower. And apparently it was subtle enough that the people inside Babylon didn't even notice it. So guess what his soldiers did? They marched under the gates, under the water gate, and they marched right into the middle of the city. And if the histories are true, you know what they found waiting on them? Soldiers armed to the teeth, ready to fight them? No, nobody was paying any attention whatsoever. And the gates were wide open. And they marched in, and they took Babylon basically without a fight that night. If Herodotus is correct, that's what happens. Didn't work out for Belshazzar, though. As king, he was executed. What's our point? What do we take away from this? 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body, according to what he has done, whether good or bad. Judgment may come upon us tonight, and we may not be ready. We may be so focused on all these other things, on the work I have to do, and I've got this project in school coming up, and I've got baseball practice, and I've got this tournament coming up, and I've got to do this, and man, I got to make sure that I get in the college I want to, and I got to make sure that I'm working to get that promotion that I need, and none of it matters if judgment comes tonight. And don't misunderstand me. Are those things important things that we want to do? Sure. If they take God's place, they're wrong. I just need to make sure. I need to get my priorities right. I need to be ready in case tonight is the last night. Go ahead and get your songbooks out. What I would ask for you and me as well, you know, we offer this invitation, a chance to ask for prayers, a chance to obey the gospel. What I want us to do is just stop. Just stop. And take an honest look at our lives. Am I what I should be? And I know, if I'm honest with myself, I know the answer to that. Am I what I should be? Am I the man that I should be? Am I faithful to my Lord? Is He first in my life like He should be? And if the answer is no, fix it. Just fix it. He wants us to. I don't have to go slay some dragon to get in His good graces. He is pleading and giving me time right now, giving you time as well. Let's make it right, whatever we need to do. Please come as we stand and sing.